Hello everyone, and welcome again to the Associate Affiliate Cricket Podcast. The cricket starts again in a couple of weeks. We've got a huge number of games ongoing, including the final two regional qualifiers for the World 2020 qualifiers, and the Ireland's matches against England, and the start of the Intercontinental Cup and World Cricket League Championship. And to join me for all those previews and some other news is my regular co-host, Andrew Nixon. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
Andrew, in our last podcast, we chatted about the ICC meeting, which was ongoing at the time that we did it. And there was a couple of results out of that, though, as usual, some of the things, the main things that were probably interesting to discuss didn't seem to come out of the meeting.
Yeah, I suppose the main thing of that would be the future of the Cricket World Cup, 2019 tournament. We assume was discussed whether it will be remain a 10-team tournament. Warren Jeutram of Cricket Ireland came out of the meeting saying he was hopeful that it was going to be reviewed. And he raised the possibility of one of them horrible World 2020-style preliminary rounds, which would mean that it still really would be a 10-team World Cup, of course.
Yeah, apparently it was also raised by both South Africa and Australia that Ireland need more games, obviously, for them to have the opportunity to qualify. So that's good that that's been raised, but, I mean, raising it isn't sufficient. Someone needs to actually change the future tours program.
Yeah, it's, if Australia and South Africa are so keen for Cricket Ireland to have more games, and well, why not schedule some games against Ireland? Which would be my response to that. You know, Australia are coming over for one ODI. Well, why not three? Yeah, why not a couple of 2020s? Why not a three-day game or whatever? So it's all very well them saying, yes, Ireland need more games, but we'll do something about it.
The fate of the Asian Cricket Council was also decided or confirmed, I guess, since we kind of knew what was going to happen, but it's going to be wound up in July and merged into the ICC. So hopefully it's not a disaster, but certainly this year that their activities have been curtailed significantly. So it seems like them being the standout has probably come to an end.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the tournament schedule for Asia this year compared with last year. This year they've just got one tournament, you know, the 2020 Cup that has already happened, whereas last year they had, I'm just counting them now, 1, 2, 3, 4, about 12 tournaments, you know, last year, and, you know, this year only one, so that's just, you know, a sign of things to come that, you know, we would hope that other regions would be run like Asia. You know, Asia does, you know, we must say, have a benefit. It has, you know, about as much funding given to it as the rest of the other four regions combined, but we would like to see the other regions run like Asia and not Asia run like the other regions, which unfortunately is looking like that's what we're going to get.
And the decision, as expected, on USAKA was put aside until the conference. I guess they have to follow the protocol that's put in place as much as anything, which is to suspend them at the annual meeting and warn them the meeting before. But they have put in place a body to examine what's happening in USAKA and meet with all the stakeholders led by Dave Richardson. So presumably that will come through with some sort of conclusion. And it would surprise if the conclusion wasn't these guys aren't very good, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will suspend them.
USAKA have escaped from suspension in the past, and, you know, it's quite possible that they will do so again. You know, Dave Richardson says he'll be meeting all relevant stakeholders. You know, whether that includes people involved with the American Cricket Federation or not remains to be seen. You would certainly hope that they would, but, you know, the last time Dave Richardson had a trip to the US, he only met people related with USAKA, so your history doesn't look good on that regard. You know, it's a wait and see thing. I think as well, what happens, I was something we were talking about earlier in Indianapolis at the Americas Division 1 may go a long way to seeing what's going to happen. If USA qualified for the T20 qualifier, it actually becomes harder to suspend them because it throws preparations for that tournament into somewhat of a disarray. So we'll see what happens there.
The other thing that came out of the meeting was that Nepal will be hosting the under-19 qualify. That's the repechage between the regions that hadn't already qualified. So that is a little bit up in the air for a number of reasons now. Obviously, in the first place, they needed to have a ground that was capable of hosting it, or grounds, and that was not set in stone, but it's become a little bit more difficult, obviously, with the unfortunate events and the earthquake in Nepal last week.
Obviously, our thoughts are certainly with anybody affected by the earthquake. It seems that the players are all either out of the country or have remained relatively safe. But obviously, cricket not really on the mind for Nepal now, but I think there's other things going on outside of that. Nepal are currently on notice from the ICC. They could theoretically be suspended at the annual meeting if they don't get their house in order. So, very much up in the air. Nepal, I think we expect it to be given the hosting because they are the only team taking part that we know are taking part that has sufficient facilities to host it. And the Nepal fans will always provide a good crowd. This would be the first ICC tournament they would have hosted since the Division 5 tournament, which obviously had that rather ungracious riot, if a riot can be gracious, that sort of spoiled Singapore's chances of progressing from the tournament. And so this was a big decision for the ICC to actually give it to Nepal. Very much up in the air, as we say.
In similar ICC news, in a sense, the big news in world cricket over the last couple of weeks is the ESL group breakaway being not so much announced as leaked out. It's been known to a number of people for a long period of time. It's now been had a number of articles written about what that might mean for world cricket. In terms of what it means for associate cricket, there's been a lot said about the idea that ESL group has been targeting associate nations because they are very much put off by the ICC at the moment, and that is, if they're going to try and make their own world governing body, something that they would probably at least lend them an ear to. I do think, though, that the idea that it could get into the Olympics through this movement is very unlikely at this point, not least because the ICC is the official Olympic representative. Even though they're not in the Olympics, they still have that status. So the Olympics would have no interest in bringing a sport in that's split into two and so forth. So this is an interesting development, but it's not necessarily all great for associate cricket if it heads in that direction.
Yeah, there's sort of positives and negatives for this. If the positives are if associates get a fairer share of the deal, that's a positive. But I've written before about wanting a breakaway, but led by the associates. So this isn't really the breakaway I was looking for. This seems to be a breakaway more about it's a TV rights dispute, and it's a little bit similar to the situation that Rugby League faced in the mid 1990s, where rival TV companies in Australia wanted the TV rights, and then when one of them didn't get it, they sort of broke away and set up their own rival governing body. And the result of that actually was rugby league at that time was run a bit like cricket is today, with your full members and affiliate members, and one under your affiliate members couldn't play full internationals except in the World Cup. And what the breakaway group did with that to get more international teams involved, they just offered lots of those sort of minor nations, especially in the Pacific, just full status, you can play full internationals. And they came along and signed up for it. And then eventually, once everything got sorted out, rugby league became a lot more fairer governed sport, and all teams can play full internationals now. And so if that was the result, then that would be great. But if the group are saying the usual things about USA and China, which usually is a sign that people don't really know what they're talking about. So let's see what happens.
I think a couple of interesting quotes about it. The most interesting to me was one from Tim May, who's, of course, the former head of FICA. And any breakaway is probably going to depend on which side Fika aligns themselves with, because they're in actually the position as the union for players in a number of countries, not India but the other ones, to make quite a big difference if they decided to tell the players, hey, we're going to move in this direction. And Tim made the point that, well, there's been a number of these types of discussions being had by a number of different people, and so it's not a surprise, given what's happened in the ICC, given the number of people both within the upper echelons of the ICC, the other seven full members who've been tipped over by the big three, but also obviously the associate members, the players who feeling that they're not getting their due and are being overworked, and a whole range of things that, given that, it's not a surprise at all that there are actually these moves to potentially make a breakaway from the ICC. And this is a rod that the ICC has made for its own back, the big three particularly, by doing it. And certainly we live in interesting times, I guess, because something is going to change at some point. This is not a one-off.
Yeah, you know, we're looking for the straw that finally breaks the camel's back, I suppose. And, the big three reforms didn't quite do it, but something like this could well do it. The dam could break, and something very interesting and very exciting could happen. But likewise, something rather devastating could happen.
Let's move on to some previews then, Andrew. And let's start with the America's Region Division 1 T20 that's starting pretty much just after we finish recording this, and probably before we've actually released it in Indianapolis. It's the first time in a while that the United States has hosted a tournament. It's involving Canada, Suriname, the USA, Bermuda. It's only two teams can go through, which means one of the teams that had played in the previous World 2020 qualifiers will miss out. In the previous qualifiers, all three of those teams struggled a bit, but Bermuda and the United States particularly. We would, I guess, think that Canada's probably going to be one of those teams still, even though they're struggling occasionally, and that the other one could be interesting.
Yeah, Canada, I'd say, are probably the only team that you can be sure will qualify to some extent. That's come back to bite us in the past. They've probably had the best preparation of the four sides. USA haven't really had any preparation. You're looking at them at favourites, but I think any of the other three teams could perhaps, pick up the other qualifying spot. USA, as I just said, their preparation has been basically non-existent. Bermuda had a brief trip to Jamaica. Bermuda's preparations were thrown into disarray when one player pulled out through injury, another pulled out because he's currently facing charges for possessing heroin with intent to supply. He was never going to be allowed into the US facing those charges. Suriname had a visit from the MCC, and Suriname, they've been really coming along in recent years. The last America's qualified, they beat Bermuda, and they were very much probably the only team that are rising in the Americas, to be honest. And I don't think it's going to be like in the past where Canada, Bermuda, and the US sort of hammered Argentina and the Bahamas and the Cayman Islands. Suriname seemed to be a lot stronger than those sides were in the past, and they could well pull off a surprise and go all the way in this tournament.
The format's of a double round robin, so it's not going to come down to a single match, but because they get to play each other twice. But you still have to think that the United States versus Bermuda on the opening day may end up being one of the decisive games if Suriname doesn't manage to roll over them. Because the US, as you say, they haven't got much preparation. There's a few new players in the squad. They presumably don't really even know what their best batting lineup is or their best bowling lineup, and that's been a problem in a number of tournaments for them where they've been a bit haphazard, particularly in the first couple of games. They can't really afford to lose to Bermuda in the opening match and then try and come back from it if that's the case.
Yeah, and to some extent as well, US, even though it's been played in the US, US are playing as an away side because this is a completely new ground that's not been played on before, and that's always a factor. It's a new turf wicket. It's only been installed very recently. So, you know, we don't really know how the pitch is going to play. So it's very, very alien conditions for all four teams. And, you know, that could, you know, that's likely to have an effect as well.
Do you want to make a tip?
I mean, Canada, I think Canada are certain, and like Suriname will push Bermuda in the USA, but I think the other team is likely to be Bermuda. But you know, watch out for Suriname. That's my other tip.
I suspect the United States talent tends to win out in these types of matches, and that they probably will get it together sufficiently to get the second spot with Canada. But US cricket's always interesting, so we'll have to see what happens.
And obviously third place could well play a role as well if USA finish second and Yusaka gets suspended. So, yeah, watch this space.
Following on immediately from America's Division 1 is the European Division 1 2020, which has been played in Jersey. It's a 16 tournament. It's got Denmark and Guernsey, France, Italy, and Jersey and Norway. In the past, Denmark and Italy have qualified for this tournament as being two qualifying spots. In this case, it's only going to be the single qualifying spot. And on top of that, Jersey have really come a long way in the last couple of years. And you'd have to think it would be one of those three teams that qualify, but it could be a very interesting tournament, this one, in terms of which of those three teams goes through.
Yeah, it's looking to be one of the more interesting European tournaments in some time. Italy are probably just famous, but as you say, Jersey are really, really coming on. They've got a lot of, a few young players coming up through the ranks. Jonty Jenner, especially, he's still only 16 and, or he might be 17 now. And, he's a very talented guy. He's on the books at Sussex playing for their academy side this year. So he's obviously very highly thought of. And Denmark, they've picked a lot of new players, but it's not sure just how good they are compared to the players who've been retiring. And they are very reliant on Freddie Klocker and Amjad Khan, with the bat and the ball respectively. And if they don't fire, Denmark could find themselves struggling. And, Jersey could well surprise them, and they could surprise Italy as well. And, Jersey weren't that far off beating Italy during the last qualifier and in the semi-final of the last qualifier. So, who knows what's going to happen? And we should point out, I believe the match on the final day will be live streamed, which is should be entertaining to watch.
Yeah,
especially if it ends up being the deciding match.
Because Jersey's playing home as well, and that could make all just enough of a difference to make what happened in that last tournament allow them to get over the line. So there's no final. It'll be the top team that goes through. Denmark's playing Italy on the final day, so that may end up being the match everyone wants to see if they do manage to stay in front of Jersey up to that point.
The regional tournaments do seem to be set up to try and have the likely deciding match on the last day. I think it's something that the global tournaments could probably learn from.
And following on immediately from that will be the France versus Norway one-day match to determine who will move into World Cricket League. Again, neither of those teams is likely to qualify out of the 2020 qualifiers, but it'll be a very interesting game there to get that opportunity to play 50-over cricket.
It's certainly some time since either of those teams last played any 50-over cricket. I think it might even be 2012, maybe the last time France played, and maybe about the same time for Norway as well. So, but they do play some 50-over cricket domestically, both countries. It's a little bit harder to pick what's going to happen in there. I think my money is probably just about on France. I think they've got a slightly stronger bowling lineup than Norway have. And it's good to see some 50-over cricket at regional level. I think it's been the case for this World Cricket League cycle that they've chosen the teams that go through on 50-over performance rather than 20-over performance as they did the last cycle, which is an improvement. But I think we want to see more 50-over cricket at regional level as well.
And watch Guernsey come through and surprise us, because we didn't mention them in any way.
Yeah, so I know we have listeners in Guernsey, so they're probably very annoyed at us. But, you know, they've got some talented players. They've you know, a few sort of old stalwarts aren't playing anymore. Jeremy Frith, Lee Savardant, and a couple of other players have moved on. So they've got a very much a developmental squad to some extent, and it'll be interesting to see how they go. But unfortunately, I'm not sure they could even finish runners-up, never mind win the thing.
Some other matches that'll be on in the next few weeks. Ireland's hosting England. They haven't beat them yet at home in one of those matches, but they've been close a number of times, and you feel that eventually they'll manage to roll over them.
Yeah, especially with England picking pretty much an England A squad for this ODI. Obviously, the test match in last test match in Barbados certainly finishes a few days before this Ireland ODI, so the players are being given time off. A couple of the squad who weren't picked for the final game will be involved. So it's a very weakened England side, so this is probably the best opportunity for Ireland to get that home win against England. It's, you know, it's being played, you know, very early in the season. Early May in Ireland isn't perhaps the best time to be playing cricket, and you know they are somewhat at the mercy of England's scheduling. It is a bit of a shame for England. You know, it's this, what, you know, Ireland are marketing the hell out of this ODI, and you know, England, you know, they play on a school day, the beginning of May, with a, you know, a second choice team. And they just get one ODI and that's it. And, you know, England could do so much more, as we were saying about, you know, Australia and South Africa earlier. And it's a real shame that England don't seem to be taking this seriously. And we see as well that the last England-Ireland ODI at Malahide, you know, sold out, I think, a couple of months in advance, or at least almost sold out. But, you know, I think they've still got about sort of 1,500 or so tickets still left to sell, and we're less than a week before the game as we re-record this. So it's a little bit worrying. Obviously, England didn't pick a full-strength side, last time, but it wasn't this week. Yeah, very disappointing from England, really, I have to say.
I mean, it's symptomatic of England generally, the way they approach their cricket, that they're only interested in what happens in their home summer and promoting their own matches, and they're not even interested in building up tournaments that would allow them to spread the wealth a little bit or build up in those other nations. And obviously, you know, post the World Cup, the thing they should be looking at doing is playing a 14 tournament with the Netherlands and Scotland and Ireland or something of that ilk, and using that as preparation for their one days. Because that would
be more. This could be one of the great cricket rivalries, England and Ireland and England and Scotland. You know, we see it in other sports, in rugby union, in football. You know, these are great rivalries that are played on a regular basis, and it's really disappointing to see that, you know, the ECB can't see the obvious marketing implications of this, that you could make serious money from this sort of rivalry.
You know, good news, the Intercontinental Cup, which is, I think, a favourite tournament for us, and the World Cricket League Championship is beginning again. It's unfortunate that the only fixtures that have been released so far are those for Namibia and Hong Kong. They'll be played on the 10th, the Intercontinental Cup match, and then the 15th and the 17th for WCL, and then there's to be some T20s as well. This will be an interesting game, I think. Namibia has a lot more experience in playing 3- and 4-day cricket, because obviously they play in the Stavrigan domestic competition, and they're at home. They've played the I Cup for a number of years as well. Hong Kong's new to it. They didn't have a great match against PNG recently. They're missing a couple of players. You probably think that Namibia experience is going to definitely tell in this first game, although Hong Kong have certainly results-wise had the better pedigree in recent times.
Yeah, and then adding to that is Hong Kong aren't really familiar with the conditions. They've not played in Africa since 2008, And they played a World Cricket League tournament there, and I don't think they've ever played in Namibia. I think you have to just put Namibia as slight favourites due to their experience. But you know, Namibia are missing a couple of good players. Also, Christy Vilhoun no longer plays for them, so you know, he's a big loss for them. So I think it'll be a close game. I think Namibia just about have the edge.
And obviously the WCL Championship games that follow, it's not actually clear what they will be for, given that in theory Ireland and Afghanistan will be heading to the World Cup, have the opportunity to qualify directly for the World Cup, and then will be moving into that qualifier. We think six teams from the WCL Championship will move forward from that, but obviously that doesn't necessarily tell us what's happening in divisions below. So it's certainly their matches.
We can't expect the ICC to actually tell us what's going on.
Well, that's exactly right. And but we, that being the case, their matches that they may end up in the future being quite important. And so that, again, because Hong Kong's been playing pretty well in one day cricket recently, it'll be interesting to see how they manage to go there. And they'll have the I Cup match before that, so that they'll have some idea of the conditions by then.
Yeah, I think Hong Kong are probably better suited to the one day game as well. So I think I think Hong Kong have a better chance at maybe winning those games than they do the Intercontinental Cup games. And then they also play some 2020 games, and you know, we know how good Hong Kong can be in 2020 cricket.
Turning into some other bits of news that came out, wrapping up, there was a good story in Africa. In a couple of tournaments have been announced. One was somewhat amusingly, even on the logo, called the Africa Cup. But it is a great initiative. It's played between the domestic sides of the Selangor Second Division and Kenya and Namibia.
This does seem to be something of an expansion of the current sort of second tier tournaments in South Africa. There was a 2020 event for those this year, which Namibia took part in. They just seem to have added Zimbabwe and Kenya into it, and then there's 13 South African provincial sides. But you know, they're expecting your international players, South African international players, to be playing for the provinces in this event. So I think they're trying to make it into something of a big deal. It's like the tournament lasts a month. Hopefully Namibia and Kenya will get to play games at home as well. It'd be interesting to see what strength side Zimbabwe send. It'd be I'm not entirely sure they'd be too happy about being asked to take part in the second tier your South African competition. You know, it's a bit like Ireland being invited to play in the Minor Counties Championship in England. And you know, so I expect Zimbabwe won't send a full strength side, so, you know, send something of an A side or an under 23 side, something like that. So, but yeah, it's any cricket that these teams get can only be a good thing.
Yeah, no, I think it was interesting that the chief executive of Cricket South Africa was obviously Haroon Loogat, said that he was keen to lead the way in developing an Africa-wide competition, and this is a starting point for that. So I think he's come out of the ICC. He was quite interested in development when he was at the ICC, and he put forward the Wolf Report, amongst other things. So this seems to be something that he's taken on as his way of helping the local region, and that could only be a good thing for African cricket if it does take off, and if it can be expanded in the future to take in nations like Uganda or Nigeria and ones like that.
Yeah, perhaps with a qualifier to decide the two associates taking part, if you like, or you got a bigger tournament. It was interesting, I think, at the launch event. You know, this is a 16-team tournament, four groups of four. He described that as a World Cup-style tournament. Obviously, I think he's getting a bit of a knock-in at the ICC there.
And finally, Rwanda will be hosting a women's tournament. It's not until June, but it's good to see that women's cricket in Africa is making its way, and they'll be using it as a way of promoting peace in that local region by getting Uganda or Kenya to come along.
Yeah, obviously, you know, it's just a three-team round-robin tournament. But you know, any cricket we see at this level is always a good thing. And you know, women's cricket regionally hasn't been, I think, a target for the development arm of the ICC. And I think the organisation, the cricket board themselves, are taking matters into their own hands. We certainly see that in Europe with the sort of second tier teams over there organising their own tournaments. And you know, I see America's has basically dumped women's cricket, and we see you know, there was a women's South African championship last year, and then the combined Canada and US team that we talked about on a previous episode. So you know, the teams are having to take it into their own hands, unfortunately, but obviously, you know, that has to be done.
And that's all there is from this episode, and we'll have a lot to talk about in the next one. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Russ.